Blog Talk Radio.
I'm joined by my host, John Rossi.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Doing great. I heard you guys did an investigation this weekend.
Yeah, we sure did. We were actually up all last night, so I'm a little tired tonight.
I heard you got a cat nap today, though, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not sure it helped, though.
Yeah.
So,
who was all on your team this weekend?
Well, actually, they were all people who were Paranexus members. Tim and Joel and Michelle, they were there.
Great.
And we were actually working with a Native American shaman, and it was an interesting night.
Nice. Yeah, I heard we had other Paranexus members on the Florida side that actually were in Polk County Historical Museum. They had an event there this weekend at Bartow, Florida. I believe it was Friday night. And looked like they had a decent turnout there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. And, oh, by the way, I don't know if anybody's read the Paranexus threads or the forum. One of our members, Gaurav Tiwari, looks like he's got his own show over in India now on MTV. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely, you know. It's nice that, you know, he can do something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never know.
Yeah, Gaurav's our certified paranormal field investigator regional director for India.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Man, that's something else. What's the name of that show? Was it Girls Night Out or something?
Girls Night Out is what it was called. And yeah. The premise is that each week they bring in three young ladies and take them to a haunted location, and then they're basically rated on, you know, how they performed at that particular location.
Wow.
And Gaurav's like one of the, like, judges, if you will.
Oh, okay, cool. What, I mean, were they, what is it? We figured that out, wasn't it? Wasn't it like $100,000 in U.S. dollars?
I'm not sure we figured that out right. I think that the website that we were looking at for the conversion may have not had their numbers right, so I'm not quite sure how much they're making on if they win.
Wow. Wow. Well, let's see. You guys were near Buffalo Gap, Virginia, right?
We were. And that area is, like, you know, from a historical standpoint, it's an incredible area. There's all kinds of documented Native American history associated with it. There are all kinds of things were happening down there during the colonial times. There was a lot of stuff happening during the French and Indian Wars. A lot of things were happening down there during the Civil War. Near Buffalo Gap, there were two key rail junctions. I mean, absolutely essential rail junctions for the Confederate states, and so
so that was like a more or less a point of attack for the Union soldiers then, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and just, I mean, it was incredibly important to each side for different reasons, and so a lot of energy, you know, was put into, you know, fortifying it or attacking it. So,
oh wow. Well, I got a question. What kind of equipment did you guys bring along this time?
Oh, last night we were using the Flare B1 thermal camera, and we were using a Sony camcorder that's been converted to full spectrum, and we had a number of regular Sony camcorders that Joel has equipped with, like, nuclear powered illuminators. It's like, infrared runway, you know, landing lights kind of situation. I mean, it just lights it up in ways you just can't really imagine. It, every time he turns them on, I just start laughing because it's just, I don't know, it amuses me.
Well, you can feel the heat from them from 10 feet out or something?
It's just that, you know, if you use the one that's on the camera, you know, you're almost blind. And then if you just put one of the normal attachments on there, you kind of end up with this kind of tunnel vision type field of vision.
Yeah.
This thing's just like, it's like you turned on floodlights. It's just incredible what he's done with them. And he's got these batteries somewhere. He's tracked down these batteries that are compatible with Sony. And you kind of have to be careful when you go out and buy things that are non-Sony, because a lot of the camcorders and stuff now have these chips in them. And if it's not a Sony product, it won't authorize its use.
Oh, wow.
Even with batteries. And anyway, he's found these ones that they're not Sony, but they're compatible. And these batteries still run for like 8 hours.
Huh.
Which is, you know, the normal one that comes with camcorders is good for about 45 to 55 minutes. And then, you know, you start beefing them up from there and, you know, you get additional runtime. And these are some big, big batteries.
Wow. That's cool. Well, how did you start the investigation off? What locations? I mean,
well, the first one we wanted to make sure we covered that night, because we actually had a whole list of places that we were going to be going to. And it turns out that they were all relatively within, well, they were within walking distance and reasonable walking distance. But I figured last night we probably walked during our investigations probably about 4 miles total and stuff like that. But it was good. It was a beautiful night out. And we were like in wetlands and forest areas, and it was pleasant. It wasn't, you know, a nasty experience by any means. But the first one we went to was the site of a Native American village, and we'd planned on doing that back in August, but we'd gotten rained out.
Now, and, let me ask this for the audience. This, when you mean Native American village, you're talking about one that's pre-existing Native. This is not even there anymore.
This is definitely not there anymore. This is like we were out in the middle of a forest, and there's like, you know, there's absolutely nothing that would even suggest that there's a village there. And certain people that have psychic abilities within the team and also the shaman knew of this place's existence and stuff. And it was an interesting place. We were probably there running our equipment probably about 3 hours straight, I would guess.
Right.
And it was kind of a challenging environment. First of all, for those of you that have like investigated certain locations are unique in the sense they just suck the batteries dry on you. And it was funny because we had had dinner with the shaman, and then we were getting ready to go to this location. And because, you know, we were having to walk in to get there, we wanted to make sure that there was no issues with equipment. So people were like doubling up. Everyone had multiple like digital recorders, and everyone made sure they had fully charged batteries or brand new batteries, you know, whatever the case may be. So we get over there, and like almost immediately, digital recorders aren't working. Batteries are going dead within 10 minutes. It was crazy. We pretty much lost about half of our equipment in the first 15 or 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. It was just stuff started like randomly malfunctioning. One of our guys has a pretty high-end digital recorder, and he would turn it on, and it would immediately turn itself on, off. So he gave up, and then he went to another one, and he did that for a while, and the battery went, you know, drained out, and pretty much he gave up on that and just started running camcorder, you know, and that's got audio in it, so that's kind of two for one thing. But everyone was having problems with their recorders there and stuff. And ultimately, when we went back and we were looking at our equipment, when we got back to the shaman's place, a lot of the equipment which refused to work at the village site was working just absolutely fine. And we were like, you know, we put it like, you know, we have battery testers and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, some of the things that were giving us like error messages that, you know, the battery was completely drained was showing up as a charged battery. But at the village, it was showing up drained. The one piece of equipment that was like going on and off, you know, you could say, well, you know, it's got a bad switch in it or something like that. Well, as soon as we got back to Shama's house, it worked perfectly fine, and then it continued to work perfectly fine for, you know, another 9 hours of nonstop, you know, use.
Man. So,
you know, I don't know what that means other than it was kind of weird, and it was weird that, you know, we had so many different investigators and so many different pieces of equipment were acting unusual at this site. You know, we were sensing a lot of spirit activity there. I mean, the shaman was pointing things out. And, you know, we haven't had a chance yet to review the evidence because, like, one of the things, you know, I won't review evidence when I'm not, you know, on top of things.
Right.
Because sometimes stuff is so subtle that, you know, if you miss it, you miss it, you know. I know that sounds rather obvious, but a lot of times, like with an EVP, you may initially hear it as just a click or a popping noise or something just like totally not a voice, but it attracts your attention, so then you know you amplify it, and then all of a sudden you discover that, oh, no, this is an EVP. But if you weren't paying attention, you would have just missed it and just put it off as some random noise or something.
Right.
So given the fact that, you know, most of us had, you know, zero to sleep last night, not a good day to review evidence. But we had some things over there that happened, and we were actually looking at it on the small, you know, monitor screen with the camcorder, and we're going to actually get this clip and let it make the rounds at Paranexus because, to be honest, we're kind of confused by something that occurs during this one clip. Now, it starts out that a couple of, it was the shaman and I don't know, one of the other members was looking, and they thought they were seeing a face in this bush, and they asked me to look at this thing. And what I think it was just, yeah, you know, the way the shadows fall and stuff like that, it kind of looks like the bush has got a face, but in the same way as you can look at certain clouds and see faces in the clouds.
Right.
You know?
Pareidolia.
Yeah. And it did look like a face. But the shaman kept insisting that there was a spirit over there, which I don't discount because it really felt like we were in the middle of this village and we were surrounded by a crowd. It had that feel to this place. And not that anything was oppressive or scary or anything like that, but it just, you really had the sense that we are definitely not here and there's a whole lot of them. But anyway, so he's insisting that, you know, and he's seeing this thing and, you know, he's not trained in any of this equipment, and he doesn't know how to review evidence. And
right.
I mean, to be honest, you know, he can barely operate his cell phone because that's just not where, you know, where he's at with things, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I'm basically telling him that, you know, it's nothing more than, you know, the bushes and stuff like that. But as I'm looking at this thing, and remember, you know, it's like I'm looking at a small video screen, I noticed that to the right of this quote-unquote face in the bush, the camera, like autofocus, it's like trying to focus on something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this area that's like going in and out of focus. But the thing is it's a very small area. And, you know, my experience is when the cameras get that to that place where they're trying to autofocus, it affects essentially the entire screen.
Right.
The entire viewing area is being brought in and out of focus.
So you're saying that there was part of the actual video field that had a blurred effect?
And it was going in and out of focus while everything around it remained absolutely in focus.
Okay, kind of like there was almost like a heat wave or something that was...
Well, I'm just going to leave it at this point that there seems to be a distortion of some sort to the area to the right of the quote-unquote face, which wasn't a face, it was just the bush. But it was an area where the shaman was identifying that there was a spirit.
Huh.
So, you know, I could see why he was insisting that, you know, the face was a spirit, because I'm thinking that it most likely was next to the bush. He was sensing it there. And our camera was picking up something. Now, was it picking up a spirit? I don't know. It was picking up something, and it was doing something that in all the years of using these Sony camcorders, I've never seen the camcorder do this particular thing. Which, again, that doesn't mean that it was paranormal. I'm just saying that in probably, you know, literally at this point, thousands of hours of looking at this kind of material, I haven't seen a camera do what this camera was doing. And we used that camera the rest of the night, again, another 9 hours or so, and it never did that again.
Interesting.
So there was a lot of weirdness just in terms of equipment on this site.
Yeah, I'd like to review that evidence. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, as soon as we, you know, get it down, I'm gonna have it sent around, just because, you know, obviously we'd like to be able to rule out that there was any kind of camera-related, you know, malfunction that, you know, someone would know about, that this particular model has this particular potential defect or creates a certain artifact under certain lighting conditions and stuff. But I'll say this about it. We were using these two gigantic illuminators. So it wasn't one of these kind of things where we were like, and it also wasn't that far away from where we were filming. So it wasn't one of these situations that we got to the point where we were either outside the range, the focal range of the camera, and that pixelating occurs.
Right.
Or we are outside the range of the light, the illuminating for the camera, and that pixelating occurs. Neither one of those, because literally they were probably within 10 feet of this bush, and as I said before, these illuminators, you know, are like floodlights. So.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think I'd like to get a hold of that and see what I can pull out of it and see what's in there.
Yeah, so that was, you know, interesting stuff going on there. I was using, you know, my flare camera, and nothing caught my attention during the time we were using it. Well, actually, I should say something that I mentioned to everyone at the group that did catch my attention with the flare camera. You know, I live out in the middle of a national forest, and I frequently take my camera out at night and experiment with it, because, you know, the more I know about this camera, the less likely I'm going to, like, go to the wrong place with it during an investigation. And, you know, I learned that, for instance, when I walk across the grass, my camera is sensitive enough that my footprints will show on the ground.
Oh, wow.
Even, you know, I'm wearing shoes, you know, and it still shows up on the ground and
that,
stuff like
just
that.
Just that subtle temperature difference is showing up.
Absolutely, and it remains for probably, you know, again, depending on how cold it is outside, 5 to 10 minutes. So knowing about, you know, certain things that your camera is capable of doing, of course, you know, enhances your ability as an investigator. So I'll take it into the woods. And one of the things that I learned right early on is that at night, when I shine it up into the trees, I can find where, like, squirrels are sleeping. I can find the birds that are roosting in the trees. Anything that's moving around, like possums or raccoons or any of the night creatures, oh, it picks it up in a heartbeat. I mean, it just stands out like, you know, oh, yeah, absolutely, that's what it is, right?
Right.
Okay, this area where we were at, where this Native American village had been, probably encompassed, I'd say, about 4 acres. And according to the shaman, this was a large one, you know, like, there was probably thousands of Native Americans that lived there. This was a huge village for the area and stuff. So, you know, picking up probably over, you know, 5 acres would make sense given what the supposed population was for it. Okay. In this area, I'm standing at what, you know, I believe to be more or less the center of it, and I'm panning around, and all of a sudden I notice I'm hearing crickets, but I don't hear any other night sounds. And you could say, well, yeah, of course, you know, you're out there and you've scared the animals. But after a while, when you settle down, things get active again.
Right.
And we'd been, you know, sitting quietly for 10 or 15 minutes, and I realized I'm not hearing anything moving. I'm not hearing any birds. So I start panning in the trees, and I'm looking in all these trees and stuff like that. And there's no squirrels. There's no birds. There were no animals around in this area. And, you know, it's like this time of year here in Virginia, it's still warm enough, and the animals haven't, like, started hibernating or anything like that. And it was a nice night, so it wasn't like, you know, there was weather that was keeping them all bunkered down or anything like that. So to me, it was like, it was unique that this particular area of the forest not only is, like, totally screwing up all of our electronic equipment and making it just do things that they shouldn't be doing, it was also an area where there didn't appear to be any animals. And again, you know, I don't know what it all means other than there were no animals there.
That's interesting. Very strange. So, I mean, what did you guys, how did you see, spent about 3 hours there at that location?
Couple hours anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Then, you know, we ended up hiking back. We were using the shaman's house as like a base camp. And, you know, we had some coffee and kind of were processing what we had identified there. And, you know, kind of talked about what it all meant. And was, and the other thing was, it was kind of funny just how all of a sudden all the equipment started working, you know, once we got out of there. So then, you know, we ended up hiking out to another area. And it was almost like I felt like I was back in, like, school or something, because the shaman was, like, continually, you know, testing my psychic abilities, if you will. Because we'd be walking, and all of a sudden he'd stop, and he'd look at me, and he says, "Tell me what's here," kind of thing. And but the thing is a lot of times he'll ask that, and I know that there's nothing there, but I think he's trying to, like, figure out whether or not I'm going to BS and like, come up with, "Oh, yeah, there's something here," or, you know what I mean? It's like that constant testing. Or, you know, he'll say something's there, and it's not, and it's all just kind of part of the test to see, I think, whether or not I'm going to be up front and, like, either challenge him or, you know, agree with him, even though there's nothing there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So a lot of times when I work with him, he takes you, let me just put it this way, he takes you on an amusing journey, because he's very knowledgeable, and he's clearly, you know, I think that, like, the path in life that he's taken for himself is one of being a teacher and helping people become more spiritual and stuff. But he has a real kind of unusual way of doing it and stuff like that, because, for instance, if you ask him a question, he won't answer you. You know what I mean? If you directly ask him a question, you're not going to get an answer, because that's, you know, that's not how he's going to teach you, or that's not how you're going to learn. I don't know. So anyway, when you're spending time with him, it's always a unique event.
Wow.
But anyway, he took us through, and we went into this one area, and you know, he said, "What's here?" And I said, you know, "Well, where would you like me to put the flowers?" And he started laughing, and one of the guys on the team's like, "Well, what do you mean?" It's like, "Well, we're in the middle of a graveyard right now." And the shaman said that we were actually standing among 20 unmarked Union graves. And later we went back there, and we were seeing shadow figures. And, you know, we took video and photos of the area. But, again, we haven't had a chance to review to see if we actually caught anything on there. I mean, we were seeing things later.
Right.
But
when you say seeing things, are you talking about, like, shadow people or actual?
Yeah, we were seeing like shadow type figures moving, and I don't mean just. I'm not talking about just like an indistinct blob moving, and you're saying, "Oh, look, the shadow moved." I mean, black silhouette type.
Oh, so you could actually see humanoid shadows moving.
Yeah, I mean, and when you looked at them, you got the sense that you were looking at probably soldiers.
Wow.
You know. Sharon's in the chat room talking about little grasshopper. Well, I want to let Sharon know the shaman is looking forward to meeting her, and he made a point to tell me a number of times during the night that Sharon's going to have a very interesting visit with him. So, little grasshopper in the chat room, you're going to have an interesting time. So, anyway, from that location, we ended up walking for a while, and then we came to another place, and he asked me, well, what's here? And I said, well, we're in another graveyard, but this is different. And he was going, well, what do you mean? And I told him, I said, I think these are the graves of Native Americans in here. And now at this point, we're again in a dense, like, second or third growth type forest.
Right. So
it's really packed. You know, it's not open. And you know, there's this, like, trail that we're on. And he goes, well, what else? And I told him, I'm getting the sense that I'm seeing things at a horizontal level at about 5 to 6 feet off the ground. And I said, oh, they buried them. They elevated their dead. And he looks at me and he says, no, this tribe didn't do that. And I'm looking and I can, like, in my mind's eye, I can, like, or in my head, however you want to put it, I could totally see it. I knew exactly how they were positioned. So I said, no, they put them on these platforms, and they're, like, this high. And then he said, yeah, actually they did. And evidently what the burial custom was is they would put their dead up on these platforms for a period of time until essentially the bones were picked clean.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, they were collected in another ceremony, and they would then be buried in the ground. So, see, you know, not knowing that much about Native cultures and stuff like that, most of the tribes out west, they do the above ground, but there's no like second part to it. You know, they basically would put them on an elevated platform, or they would stick them, you know, in the limbs of a tree,
mm-hmm.
and that would be the end of it. But evidently, most different types of cultures, there's different burial ceremonies and things that, again, you know, I wasn't aware of, but they don't all put them, you know, elevate them and stuff. And then we continued walking and came to another location, and he stops and he's asking me, well, what's here? And I said, well, there's a woman here, and it's real subtle. And he says, and what about her? And I said, I think she's buried near here, but she's not buried here. And he's like, yeah, that's correct. And can you tell who she is? And it's like, no, I just know that, you know, she's a white woman and not a Native American. And it seems like she's of, you know, an early time period, like, you know, pre-Civil War.
Right.
And he's going, yes, she's from, like, the colonial days, and she's actually one of the spirits that frequently comes over to his house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So again, you know, we continue on, and we go to another location where it was actually where this young woman's home was. You know, at this point, there's nothing there. You know, it's just a clearing. But this was the location of where her home was, and evidently there's historical, you know, records that support that there was, in fact, a homestead there and whatnot. But what was interesting, as we're there and the shaman's pointing that out, we turn away from where the house would have been, and we start walking down the trail, and Joel and I both hear a woman's voice, I thought of it as a young woman / girl, immediately to our, like, right. And within, like, I would say 3 or 4 feet of us. And we're pretty excited about that because we heard it with our ears. And he was running a camcorder, and I was running a digital recorder. So I'm hoping we caught that as, you know, an EVP. Well, it would be an audio anomaly since, you know, we heard it when it happened, yet there was no young woman with us. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Did you actually hear what she said, or did you just hear what sounded like mumbling?
Well, I think she said two words. I can't tell you what the words are, but I can absolutely tell you it was a young woman, girl. Given that she had been with us earlier down the trail, and now we were at a place that, you know, was her home, you know, doesn't necessarily surprise me because she's not a residual haunting. I mean, she actually frequently goes down the road to where the shaman lives and, you know, interacts with the family there.
Oh, cool. Didn't you say you'd had a bad headache that night?
Yeah, I had some other stuff going on that night too, just in terms of as I was actually driving. A lot of times when I drive to an investigation location, I'll have spirits contact me. And it just was something going on, and it was a spirit that wasn't associated with what we were doing that night, that was continually trying to communicate with me, but at the point where I was having like these bouts of almost like having a migraine type headache. And one of the people on our team, Joel, he does energy work. And to be honest, I don't know anything really about energy work. And he also works with crystals and rocks. And again, that's something that I basically know nothing about. And, you know, I was talking about this headache and how this spirit was basically blasting me throughout the night. And it was kind of like distracting me from the investigation and also distracting me from, you know, being aware of, you know, the things that were around us. You know what I mean? Because literally it was like the activity that was around us was like someone talking softly, and then there was this other thing that was basically screaming at the top of its lungs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just in terms of how it was like competing for my attention. It was really, you know, affecting me. And, you know, so Joel says, hold out your hand. So I hold out my hand, and he drops this black rock in my hand. And it was a shiny black rock. And literally, I mean, it was almost immediately that the level of, like, pressure in my head and stuff like that, I would say diminished by probably 80 or 90%. It didn't totally go away, but, I mean, it was just like someone had thrown a switch. So I said, what is that? And he said it was this iron-based rock, hematite, I think.
Yeah, that's what I kind of guessed it was earlier. I thought that was really curious. And you said it supposedly lowers your resonant frequency?
Well, that's what, I mean, first of all, Joel and the shaman said that literally when they approached me that night that I was like buzzing in terms of like just high energy frequency type thing. And again, you know, I'm not saying that there isn't frequencies and these energies and stuff like that. I just don't know. And it's not something that I've like embraced and I've like investigated in terms of like reading up on it and stuff. So, you know, I don't know. This is how they're describing how they're perceiving me. Okay. And he said that basically hematite lowers a person's energy frequency, whereas like something like quartz is like an amplifier of a person's energy. And again, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't have a belief system in here, and I don't even have really an opinion. And I didn't know what he was going to put in my hand. You know, for all I knew, you know, it's like he could have handed me a digital recorder. So I didn't have an expectation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some people would say, oh, well, you had a preconceived notion that, you know, this rock was going to make you feel better, therefore you felt better because it's all in the power of your mind.
Right.
Which, all that's absolutely true, except, first of all, I didn't know what he was going to do. He didn't say, here, I got something that's going to help you, or, you know, I know what your problem is, let me get this thing. It was none of that. You know, it's just, he just said, hold out your hand. And since I'm not like a believer or disbeliever. I'm like totally neutral in the whole concept of rocks and crystals and things of that nature and energy work. You know, I didn't have a preconceived belief that would, I think, trigger a thought process to like make my headache go away.
Wow.
So, again, what happened? I have no idea. All I know is that the rock hit my palm, and I closed my hand on it, and basically I no longer had like a migraine-type headache. You know, it went to totally just low-level kind of tension-y thing, and it was immediate. You know, just one more like unusual personal event that occurred during the night.
Huh. I think that's kind of cool.
You know, Sharon's actually in the chat room talking. I mean, she's had a personal experience regarding a rock and somehow this rock's ability to help her from an energy standpoint, it seems, you know, in a positive way. I actually heard about Sharon's rock from the shaman, so I'm assuming that Sharon and the shaman at some point had a discussion regarding it, or again, it was just one of these things that the shaman seems to know things that he shouldn't really know.
He does that to you a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does it, and I think it amuses him because it just totally, you know, I'm always trying to look for the explanation of, like, how could he possibly know the things that he's telling me, you know, because it's like, you know, I'm just trying to be analytical and, you know, understand what this process is. And
well, you were telling me you got playing back EVPs from a location he'd never been to, and he was telling you the correct room it came from.
Yeah. He's coming up. We're doing a joint investigation at Jordan Springs with a group called Adventure Myths, and they're actually going to be doing a mini documentary. It's going to be a promotional video for Jordan Springs. And as part of that event, we're going to be up there for 2 days and one night. And I invited the shaman up as well because we're going to have the entire estate to ourselves. And the shaman has taken it on himself. Evidently, he does some remote viewing or he does astral travel. The thing is, it's like when you're talking with him, you have to understand that, first of all, there's a cultural difference between us and him, okay? So that sometimes gets in the way of, like, effective communication.
Okay.
Just in terms of, like, you know, we seem to be a little bit more technologically oriented than he is. And he definitely has more of a, like, nature connection than we do. And, you know, something that, you know, we would say that, oh, that's remote viewing. He may say that that's traveling. You know what I mean? So a lot of times, you know, we've got these, we're probably talking about the same thing, but we're using different terminology.
Yeah, and it goes back to semantics, right?
It goes back to semantics, and it's a lot of times, you know, it's like we're probably talking exactly about the same thing. You know, and it's one of those things that I think that a lot of times, a lot of the big arguments in the paranormal community have is, like, people start getting crazy over what they call something, but they should just put that word aside and think of the concept, because they'd more or less be in agreement, because they're basically experiencing the same thing, but they seem to, like, go insane if someone names it in a way that they're not okay in terms of naming it. So,
right.
I don't know. But, yeah, what was interesting was, I had intentionally not told the shaman things about Jordan Springs because I didn't want to, like, prejudice him and, you know, create, you know, a background for him so he could tell us all kinds of things that were based on possibly what I've shared with him, right?
Right.
But he's taken it on himself to remote view at Jordan Springs to the point that he has very detailed knowledge of the interior of Jordan Springs. And if you go online, there is no photos of rooms that he talks about, and talks very specifically about, you know, how the room's constructed, what's on the floor, you know, things of that nature. So, so anyway, I figured, well, since he's been there in one way or the other, I might as well tell him some of these things. Because, you know, he's asked me over the last couple months questions, and I kept telling him, I said, why don't you just wait until you get there, and, you know, after you experience it, then I'll tell you what my experiences have been. So anyway, last night we decided to share some of our EVPs that we've collected over the last 2 years. What was crazy was, first of all, the EVPs, he wasn't sitting at the computer, so he couldn't see what the file names were, okay? You know, he was actually sitting behind the computer, so he didn't see the screen, and, you know, we would hand him the headphones. And he'd hear something, and then he would tell us what room it was recorded in.
Hmm. Was he actually identifying the spirit, too?
Yeah, a couple of them. I mean, there's a particular spirit that really doesn't like me over there and continually, like, messes with me and stuff. And a number of the recordings are of that spirit. And anytime it was him, the shaman would start laughing and stuff and saying, oh, it's your friend again kind of thing. But anyway, to me, it's like, you got to understand, the main building at Jordan Springs is 48,000 square feet, 87 rooms.
Golly.
Okay? And he's telling us what room we recorded it in. And he never once said a room, identified a room. Now, he didn't do it on every one of them, but he did it on a lot of them. And every one that he did, he identified the room, and he identified typically what floor of the building. So in his head, he understands the entire layout of the building. Like, this one particular spirit hangs out in a billiards room, and it's located on the third floor, directly across from the stairway.
Okay.
And you know, he would say, you know, it's like, that's the billiards room. Well, initially he'd go, you know, it's a room on the third floor. It's directly across from the stairway. And then, you know, he'd build more detail into it. But, you know, the thing was it was just the fact that given how big a place it was, to be able to, from the EVPs, have a sense of where the EVP was recorded in the building, to me was just like, I don't have an explanation for that, you know? You know, is it all part of, you know, if you get back to the concept of, you know, remote viewing, like the cosmic records or something like that, or whatever, I don't know. But evidently he was able to tap in and access that kind of information. So.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whenever you're around him, Mike, I'm telling you, it makes for an interesting night.
Well, I can't wait next year to come up there and, like, make my rounds. So that's what I'm planning next year, at least for my vacation.
Well, you know, on October, let me see, October, we have a show on October 31st.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on October 30th, Sharon's going to be coming down. She's going to be actually coming out on the 29th to go to a Jordan Springs event and help us with the radio show that we're going to be doing that night. But on the 30th, she's pretty much the guest of honor at a sweat ceremony that the shaman is doing, and essentially for her, in her honor. So, and let me tell you, Mike, he's got big plans for her. So we might want to consider for our Sunday show on the 31st, that we, like, maybe extended another half hour or an hour, because I think we're going to have a lot to talk about what happened to Sharon that night.
Or maybe even get Sharon on the radio, for that matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Sharon, fair warning, we're getting you on the radio that night.
Oh, yeah, in your honor.
So.
Yep.
Anyway.
Was there any other cool locations you guys had actually got, you know, went and, Didn't you say that there was some place that you ever, there was like two or three people actually were seeing stuff and the video camera was pointed that direction also?
Yeah, I mean, at one point, the shaman said, put the cameras on him.
Uh-huh.
There was something about him.
Uh-huh.
And now, you see, I don't know if I saw this with my eyes or I saw this with my mind. And that just, to me, I hate saying stuff like that because it just sounds too crazy. But I'm just being honest. I don't know exactly what I saw other than the fact that the person next to me also saw it. So either we were both having a shared psychic experience and seeing the same thing in our mind's eye, or we were actually seeing something visually with our regular eyes. But at one point, something started to appear directly behind the shaman. And it came like it's like it came into focus once and then blinked out, and then it came into started to come into focus a second time and then blinked out and then didn't happen again. But to me, the shaman's probably about, I would say, 5'10". This entity, his head came to like the top of the shaman's shoulders, so a shorter, and I was getting the impression that this was like a 14 or 15 year old soldier. That was just the sense that I got in these just two quick glimpses. But as this thing seemed to like appear or whatever it was doing, you only could see it from the upper shoulder to like the top of its head. The thing is we actually had one of our camcorders pointed directly at the shaman as it happened.
Okay.
So,
was it the full spectrum by chance?
No, actually, it wasn't the full spectrum. It was just a normal night vision with the illuminator. But we were only maybe 6 or 7 feet away from the shaman. So, if we caught something, it ought to be good. But you know, that's always the big question, is whether or not what you see is what you get on film or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, that occurred, and at the time, you know, I actually asked him later, you know, what was going on, and at the time I asked him if he was okay, and he said, oh, yeah, I just got a little indigestion, but I wasn't really buying it. Whoever that was really trying to get his attention, and he was experiencing, like, pressure around his chest and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And given the way this entity was, like, positioning himself, to me, it's almost like if someone smaller went to someone bigger and grabbed them from behind.
Huh.
You know, because the arms, based on the height, would have been right across the chest area. So, you know, I don't know. So.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. And then the other thing, and this is going to get Sharon all wound up. She probably won't be able to sleep tonight. We ended up talking about Skinwalker for, I don't know, an hour or so, because the last time we were down there, Tim and I were actually part of the ceremony for the sweat ceremony, and we weren't participants, but we were actually the people charged with bringing the rocks in and the ceremony associated with that. Well, during the ceremony, the shaman always says that there's certain spirits that try and get into the lodge, and he keeps them out of the lodge. And to me, that seems somewhat legit, because my experience the one time I was in the lodge was that there's actually spirits in the lodge that are trying to communicate, and you know, he's keeping out ones that I guess are going to be problematic. And you know, the person that sits by the door is referred to as the gatekeeper in terms of the ceremony, and it's to like let certain entities in and keep certain entities out. Well, the whole area around the sweat lodge is, I don't know, for lack of a better term, is kind of like holy ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's like been blessed. And, you know, in their belief system, certain spirits and stuff can't approach this area. Well, when we were doing this ceremony, I was sensing something darting back and forth right at the tree line, right at the edge of this holy ground, if you will, which was also right at the edge of where, you know, basically the light from the bonfire ended and the darkness of the forest began. And at the time, I was talking to the shaman. I said, you know, there's something going back and forth. And, you know, it's like, I don't know what to make of it because I sense that it's like human, but I also think it's like an animal and it's like darting around and it's like, I don't know. It's like one moment I get the sense it's a man, but then I'm thinking it's an animal. And because of other stuff that was going on with the ceremony and stuff and the people that were there, we didn't end up talking about it because we had, you know, last night we had a group of, you know, basic, you know, paranormal investigators. So we were like, the conversation was at a very different level than when there's people who are not paranormal investigators present, you know?
Right.
And he basically said, oh, what you were seeing or sensing was a skinwalker. And let me tell you, when I heard that word, I thought of Sharon. I mean, it's like, oh, goodness. Not that I think that Sharon's a skinwalker, but I, you know, immediately for some reason, I don't know why, maybe it's because we tease her about it, I immediately thought of Sharon. It's like, oh, boy. But anyway, he was basically saying that it was a skinwalker trying to come in and, like, you know, interrupt the ceremony and stuff.
Huh. So I take it skinwalkers are bad guys, more or less.
Yeah, they are bad guys. And so, you know what? Again, I don't really know what skinwalkers are. It's not something that I've looked into the research and stuff like that. So I asked him, I said, well, what is your concept of what a skinwalker is? And basically, he was saying that the Native American, at least his tribe's belief is that the skinwalker is essentially, you know, kind of like a shaman gone bad. It's a shaman that type person who engages in, like, the black arts, I think is how he said it, with a total disregard for all others. It's all about being self-absorbed and doing whatever he needs to do for his own personal gain, no matter how destructive it is to the people around him or anything like that. The other thing that he said is that the people who do this stuff are corpse practitioners. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? Because, you know, I kind of had an idea, but I wanted to make sure that I wasn't making any assumption. And basically he says that the people who become skinwalkers have engaged in, like, you know, these practices that use parts of corpses as part of the ceremony.
Wow.
And, you know, again, this isn't exactly in my comfort zone just in terms of the whole concept and, you know, everything. So, you know, I'm asking him, it's like, well, so, you know, what exactly is this thing? And he says, well, it was once human, and because of how evil and twisted it became, it kind of like became something in some ways less than human in terms of its afterlife, and that's kind of the animal aspect to it, you know. And we kind of got sidetracked, but, you know, the way he was talking about it, you know, it was almost like the animal part of it was almost in some ways symbolic of the fact that this human had become so evil that very literally it lost its humanity.
Huh.
So.
I know people like that in real life.
Well, dude, let me tell you, you know, as a police officer, I can tell you there's monsters out there. And the thing is they look just like us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of doubt that there's Frankensteins and Draculas, but there are monsters out there.
Well, you know, I mean, you've had that discussion, you know, if they're bad in life, they're bad in death usually.
Well, that would kind of make sense, wouldn't it? But,
yeah. Or at least remorseful. But, you know, it makes total sense that, in a way, you know, that's just like these serial killers, you know, the way they act. They don't see everybody else as being human necessarily. So they become something totally different than a human.
Well, you know, as a deputy, I was assigned to guarding a number of serial killers during their trials, and you know, they were on trial for capital crimes. So the bottom line was they had everything in the world to lose because, you know, they were going to essentially, you know, get the gas chamber and stuff. So, you know, it was a very volatile and dangerous situation. So they would have additional deputies in the courtroom just to make sure if something happened that, quote unquote, the standing order was that we were to neutralize the defendant. So, but, you know, we'd end up talking with these guys, you know, on break and stuff like that. And what was absolutely just frightening when you'd speak to them is the things that they would do and talk about in terms of how they'd, like, dealt with people in the past and stuff. They gave the same amount of energy and emotion to killing a person than you would, like, have with killing a cockroach.
Oh, my God.
You know, it was all the same. So,
in other words, they lost their humanity. They just, they're not even people anymore.
Well, you know, it's like they're not people in the sense that we're people, you know, with this, like, concern for others.
So on a spiritual level, somebody that was like that might actually appear as something different.
Well, you know, it's like the more I do this work, the more confused I get in some ways, you know, to be honest.
Well, you know, it's like with the Indian folklore stuff, it's almost like everything's a metaphorical representation instead of a direct labeling, you know what I mean? Where they have, it's more nature-oriented. And I'm finding it interesting. I find an interesting difference in cultures and how they describe things. You know, it goes back to the semantics, but I'm wondering if the perception is works the same way. It's more metaphorical on a spiritual level than it is actual labels.
You know, Catherine's asking something in the chat room, can skinwalkers harm you? And it's just like, you know, my guess is when they were in, like, human form, they would have the ability to harm you in the sense that they could do bad things to you. I don't know if they could, like, cast a spell and turn you into a frog or do something in that sense. But, you know, as a spirit in the afterlife, you know, I haven't seen anything that suggests to me yet that you can truly be harmed. So, you know, but I don't know.
Worst they could probably do is make you hurt yourself, you know, well, just out of being scared and running into a wall.
Yeah, or, you know, you become so frightened you don't sleep at night, and, you know, you lose your health because you're so stressed out because you're not sleeping and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, there's that, you know, there's that whole aspect of how things can impact on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you know, skinwalkers are clearly not an area that I have a lot of knowledge in and stuff like that. You know, I'm guessing I got to experience one, and it was definitely different and definitely something that I would I'd clearly label as not nice and evil works for me just in terms of just what I felt about. No, seriously, what I felt about this thing was you know, and actually, it felt a lot like when I was in the presence of a sociopath.
Really?
You know, just the lack of humanity, you know, the lack of, you know.
Yep. Well, it sounds like you had an interesting time up there, man. I'd love to meet this shaman. Sounds like he'd be a very interesting person to meet.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah.
Hey, well, you know what? We managed to run out of time again, so.
Well, you know, we've got Paranexus Universe that comes on Thursday night, September 30th, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 8 to 9 Central, 6 to 7 West Coast time. Doug and Grant will be interviewing Steve Parsons and Ann Winsper about time slips, the psychology of EVP, and ghost gadgets. That'll be a pretty good show. And we'll be back next Sunday at 9 o'clock Central Time, 10 o'clock Eastern, and 7 o'clock West Coast Time. So, everybody, you have a great week at work, and we'll see you, I guess, Thursday night on Paranexus Universe. And, John, you have anything else?
No. Everyone, thank you for listening tonight and joining us. We'll see you next week.
All right. Everybody have a great week.